This show is pre-recorded and furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life with your host, Alan Gervie. Alan is the managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Good evening. I am Alan Gervie, and this is Gervie's Law. We call it Gervie's Law because it's essentially a legal show. However, today we're departing from the law for a few minutes, as we do often. A lot of my guests wonder, why am I on a legal show? And they get a little freaked out because they're thinking, did I do something wrong? Last week, in fact, we had Blair Burke, who is a criminal defense attorney for so many celebrities. Her list is so long, and if you go to our podcast on Facebook or gervieslaw.com, you can hear the KBC show from last week with Blair Burke to find out what all of these celebrities did wrong and how she got them out of trouble. But actually, she doesn't name drop at all. She takes the high road. She's not a media person, but the two people we have today have spent a lot of time in front of a camera and on stage. Later in the show, we're talking to Angie Harmon, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about her new movie coming out on Lifetime called Buried in Barstow, which she actually executive produces and is the featured actress in it, playing a single mother, Hazel King. So we'll talk to Angie Harmon a little bit later, but first, we are honored to have with us someone, when you say his name, even if it's not his real name, if you have to say one of the characters that he's played, everyone knows and everyone has a smile on their face. In fact, walking into the studio today, I mentioned who I had on the show, and everyone who I spoke to in the studio just gets this warm, fuzzy feeling. Really weird that someone could have that effect. And I'm going to tell a personal story about Barry Williams, our first guest, in a minute. But let's talk a little bit about Barry, just for a background. And of course, some of you know him as Greg Brady, but he's done so many other shows and musical theater productions as well. He's been in show business for probably over five decades. I don't want to date him, but when you see the reruns of Brady Bunch, he still has that young baby look, and he does that now. He started out appearing in such classics as Dragnet, The FBI, Gomer Pyle, Mod Squad, Marcus Welby, Mission Impossible, all classics. And then, of course, he landed the big gig on The Brady Bunch, and he described himself as the most reliable big brother in the country. I think that's true. He was in a number of sequels and movies, even a cartoon show, a variety show called The Brady Bunch Hour. He executive produced Growing Up Brady, a two-hour TV movie, came out with an autobiography, Growing Up Brady, I Was a Teenage Greg. If you haven't read that book, you need to read it. It's got some really cool stuff in there, and you learn a little bit more about the show. But after The Brady Bunch, he had a very successful musical theater career. He won the former Child Star Lifetime Achievement Award in 1989, and then he starred in Pippin on Broadway. He had starring roles in The Music Man, Oklahoma, West Side Story, Sound of Music, and a host of others. He was in a sci-fi movie called Bigfoot with Danny Bonaducci, another child star. But Danny, I don't think, was the recipient of the former Child Star Lifetime Achievement Award from the Young Artist Foundation. And Barry's cracking up now. He tweets at Mr. Barry Williams. And, of course, he has this musical trio called Barry Williams and the Travelers, which is really an exciting and fun project that he can talk about. Welcome to Gervie's Law, Barry Williams.
Well, I do thank you very much, and that was such a wonderful introduction. I don't think I could top it, so nice talking with you. Have a great day.
Okay. Well, you know what? I know something a little bit more about you that you don't even realize. And I know you're not that have a great day guy who's going to walk away and just go on with his day, because you are one of the most engaging people that I have ever met. And you're thinking, I don't know Alan Gervie. I never met him, but you.
Well, frankly, I'm a little confused right now. When I thought, when I got this message, that I was going on to something called Groovy Law.
Well,
and so I thought, oh, okay, so I get it. I get the title.
That's a good one. That's right up your alley.
Not that at all.
You were the grooviest, and I'm. Marcia told you. Maureen McCormick would tell you all the time how groovy you are, and maybe we will rename the show today. I love that. Groovy's Law. But let me tell you a quick story. So I'm about 8 or 9 years old, live in Winnipeg, Canada, and we're coming to Disneyland and Los Angeles. First time family, we drive, because back in those days, you know, my dad put his arm out the window and chewed some gum and drove like 4 days to get here, because my dad's partner in Winnipeg, Canada was a man named Howard Leeds. And
oh my.
Oh my is right. How did that happen? Not Howard Lee. It was Howard Lee's cousin. So he told us, we are going to go to Los Angeles and you are going to talk to Howard Leeds, who you can tell us about. Howard Leeds was executive producer of The Brady Bunch, and you're going to go on the set of The Brady Bunch. We were so excited. We did. We came on the set. We came to a taping, and the show was Getting Greg's Goat. That was the trend. You remember that was a classic. My kids, who are 8 and 9 years old now, love Getting. You can't even say it. It's an alliteration. Getting Greg's Goat. They love the show. But we get on the set, and I feel like I'm walking into a family home. It doesn't feel like it's a TV show. It feels like you're just going on a play date. And Barry Williams is the friendliest guy. I mean, everyone was okay. Alice Ann B. Davis was really friendly, but no one was friendlier than Barry Williams, asking us all these questions. And you're only, you know, a few years older than my brother, and you were just unbelievably welcoming to these schmoes from Canada. What's up with that? Where did you get this personality? Where at the? I think you were about 16 or 17 years old at the time. And you were just this engaging guy that I'll never forget.
Well, you have touched on several points that are really significant in the development of our show, how we sort of survived it, how we got along, and the nature of the working environment. If I may, let's jump back to Howard Leeds for just a second.
Sure.
Howard Leeds came in on our, I think, for the third, fourth, and fifth years. And if you want to talk groovy, this was the man who exemplified it. He was everything Hollywood. He had the thick belts. He had the unbuttoned shirt. He wore chains. He had the coolest shades and the white hair going on. He was fabulous. I just loved. I wanted to be Howard Leeds.
You know, it's funny you say that, Barry, because when I actually moved to L.A. and I was a lawyer at NBC, he got in touch with me because he wanted to sell some shows. He was in the sunset years of his career. We went to a number of times. We would go to Nate and Al's in Beverly Hills. And
sure,
it was Mr. Hollywood. The way you just described him, I don't think he looked at me once. He was going from table to table, talking to, he knew everyone. It was the classic Mr. Hollywood. If they ever were going to cast it, that was Howard Leeds.
Bigger than life, bigger than life. I just loved having him around. And he and Sherwood Schwartz, our executive producer, there was a policy around our set, and that I'm very grateful for. Now, as you know, from being on different sound stages or being in studios where filming is going on, oftentimes you'll see closed set and no admittance, and you can't get in, and everybody's right, taking themselves way too seriously, and it's all very private and important and pumped up. Sherwood had the exact opposite idea, and so did Howard, and that was, we welcomed people. We wanted it to feel that way because that was the nature of what we were doing. In fact, we even before they gave tours at Paramount Studios, employees would bring their families through, much in the same way that you arrived on our set. So it was designed to be that way, so that what you see on TV is, you know, what you really get in real life. And in many ways, that's exactly what happened. There was never, for us as children, as kids, we didn't have those kinds of parameters put around us, like, well, don't go horseback riding, don't do any ice skating, right. Don't go surfing, don't do... We climbed up on the catwalks, we wandered around the studio. We were kids, and he wanted us to be natural and be kids. The work is disciplined enough. So that really helped us with our development. We all had a good spirit and attitude to a person about that, just like you're talking about Alice or Florence Henderson. And you're asking me a question about where at 16 or 17 years of age did that kind of occur to me, to be a little more gregarious, to be interested in other people. And much of that comes from Florence Henderson, who was a mentor for me and really taught me how to be in public. So we'd already been on the air, if I was 17, 4 years.
Right.
So there's a lot of mileage doing a television series with a network and that you put on. I mean, literally, mileage around the country doing promotions, and we were recording and we were doing concert tours and the like. And so there was a lot of, you know, public interaction. And I watched Florence, who was instantly recognizable because of her longtime Broadway career and her movie career and now the television series. And she was so gracious with people who would interrupt her meal even, but who she engaged with or would try and engage with her in a public way. And I asked her about it, and she said, you know, and it was the old, you know, these are the people, Barry, that keep us on the air. These are the people that you want to follow your life and your career.
But,
and
you know, Barry, it's more than that, because a lot of people understand that. But you and Florence, and I was fortunate enough to meet Florence later in life, and she was just like that. I remember the way you treated us and the way Florence did when I met her. It was the same. It was like joking around, fun. So you can tell that to people, like, these are the people who make it. But there's so many people who are in the limelight that completely ignore what Florence, you know, impressed upon you and how she was when I met her. So it's something it's something within you that allows you to really love other people and enjoy it, not just because they're the people who give you a career.
Well, that's very nicely said. I appreciate that. I'm just going to take that in, because that's a very, very nice thing that you have said. And I don't mean to imply that that you do it because you're going to get something out of it. But I genuinely do like the connection of people. I'm very comfortable meeting them, and I meet a lot of them. This weekend, in fact, the Brady Bunch is, in a sense, is being honored, but I'm being honored in participating in a 50th anniversary at Cincinnati's Kings Island. That's a very, very popular and a very special episode for the Brady Bunch, when we all went to this right. amusement park. At that time, it wasn't even finished. It was so new. And we went there to kind of promote the park, because our studio, Paramount, was bought it, I believe, and they were thinking about going into the amusement park business as well as movies. So the Bradys are there, and we do, it's like a travel log, chasing the plans around the park and doing
lost.
All the rides. And like. So they... that's always been a great relationship that the Bradys have had with the park. It's the 50th anniversary. They're doing a spectacular with lasers and 200 coordinated drones and fireworks and big speakers and music and production. And I'm the voice. I've narrated it. It's now recorded, and they'll run it every day for the summer and fall. For 2 years, and they're going to do this big spectacular. Well, that's to be in that kind of environment and be in that situation. You want to make more fans.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I truly enjoy the connection and being with people.
And you tweet at Mr. Barry Williams. You can find out about that celebration. He's tweeted about it, Barry Williams. And we'll talk to Barry about more, maybe even Barry Williams and the Travelers. They may be appearing there. We'll find out after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law, Groovy's Law, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Back. Are we going to hear some lyrics here?
Sweet summer's when the summer in Savannah.
Nice.
Tuscaloosa, Alabama, that's my hometown.
I think we're just going to sit and listen. We have Barry Williams with us. You're listening to Groovy's Law, as he calls it, on 790 KBC. And that's some great music. Barry.
Very groovy.
It is very groovy. There's so much music. When we talk about Barry Williams, we talk a lot about music. Tell us a little bit about Barry Williams and the Travelers and how you have... People don't know that you've had a long history in music.
No, they really don't. When you've been on television on a regular basis, consistently for years and years, and then that show is no longer, I mean, you're not on another or a different one. People kind of think like you've just gone away and maybe don't exist anymore, or lose track. Almost all of my adult life has been in music and music theater. You mentioned a few of the shows. I've done some 85 different productions over the years and toured all over and moved to Branson, Missouri, which is in the Ozarks here, and did a musical variety show, live band, kind of like what you were listening to just now, for 6 years, and I was doing about 120 shows per season, and then that ended, because it was a little bit restrictive, frankly, and I formed a trio called the Travelers. I play acoustic guitar. I've got a lead electric guitar player, and my wife plays
Tina
Polynesian percussion. all sorts of fun things that shake and rattle and scrape.
Wow.
and keep time, and is a longtime performer and singer. So our music with the Travelers spans several decades, mostly familiar songs that we know and love and you can sing along to. We've got a definite kind of country bent to the music, or like that song that you were just playing is from Uncle Cracker wrote.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had a little Polynesian because she's also a hula dancer. And then I throw in a Sunshine Day to make sure it's Brady friendly.
Yeah, so you teach choreography for the Sunshine Day, yeah, which everyone needs to know.
Yeah. Well, it's just not singing along is not enough of the Brady song. You've really got to get in there and use the Brady choreography too.
And did you do all of that on your own, the music in the Brady Bunch? Because people don't realize, you know, there were so many episodes where it featured, you singing and the group, the Brady's playing. Was that all original and on your own?
Those are all original songs, yes. I did not write them. I was instrumental, I think, in moving the show in that direction of music and pointing out to our producer that, hey, you know, that so many families that are out there making music and doing well with it, like the DeFranco family.
Oh, yeah.
And the Osmond family,
the Jacksons.
Of course, the Jacksons and the Cowsills and Partridge family. It was, you know, TV, of course, but it's the same idea. So we ended up with maybe five different kind of music-themed Brady episodes, as it was. And we recorded four albums and toured quite a bit.
Yeah, now, You had a they were great episodes. I've seen a lot, and you know, my kids love watching. They're, like I said, they're 8 and 9 years old. There's so much to be learned from the Brady Bunch for them, the family values, and just so many things about growing up. Do you have a favorite episode? I know you've probably been asked this a lot. Mine is Getting Greg's Goat, because as I said earlier, we were there watching that, and it featured Barry Williams. It was a great one. And my son Hudson actually loves Getting Greg's Goat, too. He's an athlete, and it just rings true, even though there's so many generations that have gone by since.
One of the things that was interesting about that episode is the way that Mike Brady and Greg Brady got into cahoots together.
Yeah.
You know, I was trying to hide this mascot that I had stolen until after the big game that night. And apparently he had done something like that similarly. And so he helped me hide the goat until it finally came, you know, running down the stairs and across the living room in front of everybody.
But isn't that a great lesson for a son and a father?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And you'll see that kind of charm and communication and getting along. And, you know, our show, it's an idealistic show. I don't think I've ever met a family that operates exactly like the Brady Bunch, but many people wish they had it.
Right.
And so it presents kind of a picture of how a functioning family might look. And I have been told many, many, many times how important that has been to people who came from families that simply didn't have that going on and didn't have any other example to look toward.
It's such an excellent point, Barry, because people want to look at kind of a paradigm, an example, if you will, for families and for getting along and for learning lessons. And, you know, it's tough for my kids. They watch Leave It to Beaver, but it's a little tough. It's, you know, black and white and everything. But the Brady Bunch is kind of timeless. And, you know, I'm sure when people meet you and they see you, it's like Greg Brady talking to them, and you haven't aged. You look the same, just, you know, obviously years have gone by. So it must feel good to be able to impact so many people over your lifetime.
Yes, it does. When I meet people, sometimes I can watch like a middle-aged woman just turn into a teenager right in front of me. It's kind of like a warm hug, or you see that the heart light just kind of turn on there. It's like being Santa Claus for about 2 minutes.
yeah, for sure. And you did the radio show. You know, I feel bad because, you know, you're probably more experienced. Well, I've been doing this a little longer than you did, 5 years hosting the Barry Williams Show on Sirius. Did you enjoy that? Is there radio in your future? Like, you know, are you going to be a co-host with me in the future? Or do you got other shows coming up?
I don't have any radio shows planned, but I'm enjoying this one, and I've been a big fan of the network forever. So, well, from living in LA, so I'm pleased to be with you. But I don't have plans to do any radio. I'm still really active as an actor and a singer. I'm doing a farce coming up in January of next year, and the Travelers have more dates through this year, and so that's. That's kind of what I am doing is a podcast.
Yes.
like who isn't, but I get it. But this is, it's kind of clever, I think. This we started working on this 2 years before the phrase episodic recap had even been coined, and with Christopher Knight, who played Peter Brady, and we thought, well, you know, with these questions and with the continuing interest, wouldn't it be fun to sit down? And we'll go back through the show. We watch an episode each week and to refresh and in some cases see for the first time and take notes and then sit down and talk about the episode. But now we have a perspective dialogue that was written for the 70s, you know, might not play so well in the 2020s. So we can talk about that. We also spent a lot of time on the guest stars and what they've been doing in their careers and who they've become. And the interesting thing for us has been that even though we were going through the same experiences, we were at different times in our lives. He's 4 years younger than
I. Yeah.
And so you know, he would remember something one way and I would remember it differently. And, you know, we talk about that and how that impacted him and the decisions that were made at that point. And then we answer fan questions. I love the show.
People have, it's the Brady Bros. And, you know, it's funny, my family and I were going to Hawaii a few weeks ago, and you had featured that on one of your podcasts, the Hawaii shows, and my kids were listening. They were getting some insight, and it just kind of pumped them up to go to Hawaii. There's so many, you know, whether it's a talent show, whatever it is that the Brady Bunch did, and then you and Chris are doing this kind of recap with a little more insight into it. It's fascinating. And I think that it must be fun as well, obviously, to stay in touch with a former castmate. And I know you do with others as well. But to do something that is fun and interesting to others is really, I think, probably something you enjoy.
It is. But I'm really, really impressed that on Groovy's Law here, that you actually are aware of and have listened to a podcast.
Oh, of course.
Very impressive.
You know, it's really important because what I like to do here on Groovy's Law is kind of understand who people are. It's not just an interview of Barry Williams. This is kind of the core, what makes you tick and what you're interested in. And I'll tell you, because you had such an impact when I was, you know, 7 or 8 years old, coming up and actually giving me the time of day and my family, you know, it makes it more interesting to hear when you're doing these things several years later, which are really entertaining. It's timeless, as I said. And, you know, I really appreciate the fact that you've kept this, you know, the focus, not only with your music, but also with the past. And that's what we're doing. So I want to thank you, Barry, for being with us today.
Well, you're most welcome. I'd love to join you again sometime. There's plenty to talk about. I just want to say that it has been totally groovy.
It has. And you know, I can picture your bell bottoms and your open neck shirt right now. I know you're
wearing them right now.
In Branson, Missouri, you are there wearing the 70s groove outfit.
Oh. Keep the groove on.
Keep the groove. Keep it going. Keep grooving. Check out Barry Williams, Mr. Barry Williams. He tweets. Check him out. And Barry Williams and the Travelers, thanks for being with us today.
Brady on.
Brady on. All right, you listen to Gary Slaw. We got Angie Harmon coming up after the break. Stay tuned.
Listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on AM 790 KABC.
Yes, you are listening to Gervie's Law on KABC, and I'll tell you, Barry Williams is so relieved. Good old Greg Brady, who renamed the show Gervie's Law, in the last episode, last segment actually, he was so concerned that he was going to talk about the law. And he said, I know nothing about the law. And then he got to talk about the Brady Bunch and he had such a fun time. So sometimes we throw a little bit of a curveball at you here on Gervie's Law. And we're going to continue because we got this entertainment thing going. And it is so nice now, and it's an honor to have Angie Harmon on the show. Angie, of course, won 17's model contest at the age of 15. She's a couple years older, maybe in her 20s now. We'll keep it at that. She's appeared on covers for magazines such as Cosmopolitan and Esquire, Elle, and a host of others. Runway model for Calvin Klein and Armani, Donna Karan, and all these other famous designers. She's had successful acting stints on Baywatch Nights, which I guess
she
got the gig from David Hasselhoff, meeting him on a plane. I never met anyone on a plane who got me a gig on a TV show. And of course, Law and Order, Abby Carmichael, very well-known and loved character. Movies include the animated Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker. I'm just going through her life, and she feels like this is my life. Agent Cody Banks. And of course, something I know she's very proud of, playing Jane Rizzoli on TNT's Rizzoli and Isles, and which she won a Gracie Award and People's Choice Award. She was also in Endgame, Seraphim Falls. And she directed the 100th episode episode of Rizzoli and Isles, which featured Sharon Gless, who I know she enjoyed working with. And in 2021, she signed this exclusive, with all this behind her, she signed this exclusive multi-picture deal with Lifetime. And we're going to talk about a movie coming out called Buried in Barstow. Welcome to Gervie's Law, Angie Harmon.
My God, how old am I?
I said in your 20s, you did a lot. You've done a lot.
Very accomplished 27-year-old.
But I want to tell you, Angie, what I'm most impressed about. You tweet at @Angie_Harmon. And what does it say? It says three amazing kids, UNICEF ambassador, and by the way, actor, writer, director, producer.
Yes.
You have your priorities straight. You've got the kids and the UNICEF first, and then, I've had this long, successful career as well.
Yes.
What made you, when you're thinking about this, think about kids and charity and giving and kind of putting your career secondary? Is that how you live your life?
It is. I mean, you know, I've got three daughters, and when I was younger, you know, my home life was not the greatest. And I just, you know, it's like I have no idea what I'm doing most of the time as a parent in these days and age. But, you know, I certainly know what not to do. But it's just my girls they're my life. And I would, you know, not only be crippling them if I wasn't here for them and present and, you know, being their mama. But, I mean, it's like, well, then what am I doing actually for the rest of the world if I put out these, you know, three jerks in society? I mean, you know what I mean?
And yeah. I don't know how you do it, though. They're teenagers, 13, 16, and 18, you know, learning to drive and then, you know, maybe having all these issues with the teenagers have. It's very different. Yep. And although we're not saying that you're over 30, but when you were a teenager, it's very different. How do you handle it with your girls?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. You know, my daughters and I, we have a very, you know, strong understanding of communication is key. Now, I fully know that they don't tell me everything. And, you know, trust me, I'm fairly confident that I don't want to know.
As they shouldn't be telling you everything.
You know, it's like, oh, God, please don't tell me this. I don't want to know this. I respect who they are as people. And, you know, I enjoy them immensely. They have hilarious senses of humor. Like, if I was their age, I would totally hang out with each one of them.
That's cool.
And it's just important. Yeah. And they know. I mean, you know, we've got our set of rules in this house. And that's, you know, a lot of it is based on respect for me and respect for themselves and, you know, respect for our name. And when they're out there in the world,
and they're totally,
you know, they're a representation of me.
They're totally grounded, aren't they? I mean, I know that they're not like into what a lot of kids are now and maybe not into the acting thing like you've been in or the modeling thing. But how do you develop such value-laden kids who actually respect you and love and enjoy being with you?
First off, you have to have a fantastic sense of humor.
Yeah.
And I'm amazingly funny.
Amazingly. I would love to be your daughter.
Well, I mean, that's just the thing. It's like you have to make things fun. And you have to, you know, be able to my middle daughter said it the best. She was like, I always know when you're mad at me, the best way to get out of it is to make you laugh.
Right.
Because having a sense of humor, you know, is such a necessary thing in this world and in this life. I mean, like, it's just, this is no, there are horrible things that are happening in our world.
Yeah.
You know, daily. And it, you know, it's just, I have a saying for the girls and I put it exactly this way. I was just like, look, you have to understand life will bitch slap you in the face with a dead fish. And you just when you think you've got it all figured out and you've got to be able to stand up, laugh, and off with the other cheek.
Yeah.
That, it's just, you know, life is hard.
And that's
there's
great
no
advice.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm sure somebody will disagree with it somewhere, but there's, you know, there's just no, They're still looking at our kids anymore and just being like, everything's going to be okay.
You know, I got to tell you something, Angie. No one can disagree with it if they look at your kids and see how they're doing. Look at the relationship you have with them. So many mothers don't have that relationship. Look at how they are proceeding with their life through difficult, difficult years. And as you say, a very hard world. And you can't disagree with what you just said because the proof is in the pudding.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You know, they're just, they have their own trials and tribulations. I mean, they have a lot that they go through, you know, and we have therapists. Like, that's a mandatory thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they're not embarrassed by that. I mean, if anything, they appreciate it. And it's, you know, and I just said that to them. I was just like, look, there's going to come a time when you're going to go through a lot of things that you may not want to come to me on, you know, and I'm certainly not going to have all the answers. So you've got to be able to have someone that's a neutral territory that, you know, you don't feel like you're going to be judged. You don't feel like you're going to get in trouble. You have to be able to talk to someone
so important
about your feelings and about what's going on in your life. And I got that from my grandmother who, you know, was very ahead of her time. I mean, it wasn't like you were sending your kids to therapy, you know, back in the 50s and 60s.
You know
what I mean?
It's just so important.
She was super advanced.
And, you know, with everything that happened in the world this week, with the shootings and everything.
It's just horrible.
What you're talking about is really an answer. You know, it's not easy to solve, but when you focus on mental health and when you focus on being okay and not being ashamed of working on being okay, our world just does not focus on mental health in a general sense as it should.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I wish that high school and middle school was more about, okay, this is how, you know, they had relationship classes. They had, you know, consultation classes. This is how you do it.
And group therapy.
Be a healthy relationship. You know, it's like, great, it's chemical. I don't care what the two-letter symbol for hydrogen is. Like, who cares? Yeah,
exactly. I don't remember any
like,
of that.
I don't need to know that. You know what I mean? Or do some sort of, like, program where the kids go, they figure out, like, what they like. And, you know, half the kids are science-y and the other kids aren't good at math. And then some kids are really good at storytelling and other kids want to do drama. Like, why can't we just start it there? Like, why is my kid learning chemistry? She doesn't care. I don't care. Like, no one cares.
Exactly. You know, we were choosing a camp for our kids who are 8 and 9 this summer. And one of the compelling points that we looked at is the camp we're sending to actually have group therapy for the kids so that they
Amazing.
Can sort out their problems. If they have an issue, if they're fighting with each other or they're upset about something, they sit in a circle. They don't call it group therapy. They just call it circle therapy. It's exactly what you're talking about. That's what we should be focused on. But we have to talk about people who maybe had a dark past and change. Single mothers with a dark past. That is Buried in Barstow. And after the break, Angie Harmon is going to tell us about Buried in Barstow, Hazel King, and what it's like when maybe you don't have that perfect childhood that we all are striving for our kids. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on AM 790 KABC.
All right, we're back. We're talking to Angie Harmon. And I have to say, Angie, that first segment should be required listening for all parents and for people in general, because we're going to talk a little bit about your movie and some of the things you're doing now. But what's most important is what you talked about, the focus on mental health, the focus on your kids and making sure that they're okay. That's really the important thing. That's why when she tweets at Angie_Harmon, she talks about three amazing kids and UNICEF ambassador. as well as an actor, writer, director, producer. So thank you for giving us that message. And let's talk a little bit about something also extremely important, which is the movie June 4th premiere on Lifetime, Buried in Barstow. What a great film. You are executive producer, first time, and you star as Hazel King. Tell us about it.
Well, I love how you prefaced it. It's all about people with dark pasts and just trying to get through and just trying to create a better world for their kids. And, you know, that's exactly who Hazel is, and that's exactly what Hazel's doing. You know, she had a terrible childhood, traumatic, awful, horrible things. And that's the last thing that she wants for her daughter. She so desperately wants for her daughter, you know, to have as normal of, you know, whatever the storybook childhood sort of, you know, story is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really interesting. It's like, as much as we, you know, want for our kiddos, life is going to rear its ugly head and it's going to mess with you. And, you know, so it's all about Hazel's tenacity. And at the end of the day, I mean, in like a one sentence kind of description, and it's about a mom and her love and her dedication to her child. And this is, you know, it's the epitome of that, but it's also super fun because, you know, when somebody hurts one of my girls, I just want to kill them.
Being blunt.
And in this show, I get to.
But don't you think it's
so fun?
But isn't it also inspirational? Because, you know, when you get to do something like that and the intrigue surrounding it, but it's inspiring for those people who have felt the down and out, who maybe think life doesn't go the way that they wanted it to, the little bit of disappointment. Not everyone won 17th's modeling contest at 15. Not everyone was on magazine covers like you have been fortunate enough to experience. And of course, yes, with talent.
You. And believe me, no one was more shocked than me.
But, you know, well, that's because you come from that. You're not that arrogant personality that we see too often in Hollywood. But
thank you.
This movie epitomizes opportunity for people to come back from real, really harsh and negative background.
And it's, you know, I think what I love the most about it is that it's not just, you know, it sneaks up on you and it's got twists and turns and you don't see stuff coming. And, you know, I mean, I've been in this business for,
we'll bleep that out for a few years.
For just a few years now. And, you know, it's kind of gotten to the point where when you've got a show that you in the first 5 minutes, like, I'm so bored. And that I when I first read the script, I put my own project on the back burner and this became my passion project. And I was lucky enough, you know, to already have Rizzoli and Isles on Lifetime. And they started kind of like doing it there. You know, Lifetime is really trying to like edge it up, make it a little darker, make it a little harder, you know, that kind of thing. And I was so flattered. And they came to me and they were like, you know, what do you want to do? We'll do anything with you. And there, you know, and I'd had Barstow sitting on my desk. I've been sending it around for 3 years and hearing, no, it's not for us, for 3 years. But I'll tell you, I told them, I was like, look, here's the deal. You know, I shot Rizzoli and Isles in Los Angeles and I lived in North Carolina. And that was a hell of a commute and it wreaked havoc on my family and it wreaked havoc on my girls. And I promised my girls when I was done with Rizzoli that it just, I would never leave them again. So I'll do anything you want to do as long as you can shoot it in Charlotte. And they said, they were like, oh, that's it. Oh, not a problem.
And by the way, get iconic Howie Deutsch's director. That helps.
I mean, what about that?
Yeah.
Like, I was actually talking about the show and him with, you know, some of my girlfriends this afternoon. And when I started, you know, rattling off all of his work, I mean, it's the movies of our childhood.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing.
You know, I mean, it's Something's Got to Give, Pretty in Pink, The Great Outdoors. I mean, it was just, I was so honored, and he's so wonderful and so lovely. And we just had a ball. I mean, we just had a blast.
Yeah, I mean, to be able to share that kind of project, the heart project, as you call it, with someone like that has to be kind of a dream come true. I want to ask you, Angie, about a comment you've made, and it's interesting. You can explain it. You said, some people don't make sound ethical choices, but you still love them.
You're still rooting for them.
Yeah, how do you do that on certain, like, how do you overcome? A lot of times I find myself, unfortunately, I like hold some grudges or I'm judgmental. I want to work on that,
who
though.
Isn't?
I want to be a better person and not be judgmental and not be that way. Tell us what you meant by that, how we can root for them and still love them, even though, you know, you're sitting there going, really? You did that?
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, it's an interesting and really, you know, complex dichotomy, because it's like here you've got this person that's like really making a bad decision, but you're just rooting for them because you know they're doing it like their heart's in a good place. But also, I mean, you have the veil of it's not reality. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like the Daltons in Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, something's going to go down and it's not going to be pleasant for somebody. But you root for that family because you see that they're a family and you see how much they love each other and how much, like, he's trying to do for his children with the ranch and how Beth is just the most awesome character that's ever been written and how much, you know, Rip loves her and how that brings out the goodness in her and how, like, it's just if you can widen the lens a little bit on life, you can recognize that everybody is going through something.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if they aren't at that moment, then they already have or they're about to be.
It's the human condition.
Treating everyone with love and kindness.
Right. Love and kindness. It's the human condition. It focuses on that. And that's why these movies.
But also a very large helping of understanding. Like I've discovered, like, as you know, now that I'm 27, I've had to realize that, you know, the people in my life, it takes a lot more understanding on my part, because normally the things that I'm thinking, that they're thinking, or that I'm getting upset about, it's not even in existence.
Yeah, well, it's a lesson.
It's just something that I've come up with in my head, and everyone else is just trying to get through the day just like I am.
Exactly. It's a lesson that we all need to learn and focus on, and obviously you've done it. You're working on it. It's always a work in progress. Buried in Barstow will be premiering Saturday, June 4th. And it's on Lifetime. We're looking forward to it. I think everyone will love seeing it. We only have a minute left. Angie, what do you have going on next after Buried in Barstow?
Well, it's a series. So it's a series of movies. So we just turned in script 2 to Lifetime. We're waiting on network notes. And we'll start shooting the second one in July.
In North Carolina?
Yes.
All right. Wow. That's it.